Hi, I'm Art Kaplan from the NYU Langone Medical Center, Division of Medical Ethics, and I want to welcome you to a new program, Medscape Close Up. We're going to be doing interviews with leaders in medicine, healthcare, the biomedical sciences, about timely issues of the day. Hopefully you'll get some fresh perspectives and see how leaders in the field of healthcare, medicine, and the biomedical sciences are reacting to some of the most challenging questions and problems arising in healthcare today. And I'm really pleased to have as my first guest Dr. Joe Ivy Buford, who is the president of the New York Academy of Medicine, a pediatrician, very experienced health policy expert, and also someone who's worked over the years in international healthcare issues and public health. And I'm so pleased that you were able to join me today.
Thanks for the invitation.
So let's get right down to it. We're kind of in the middle of the battle over the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as it's known. And I think a lot of physicians say to me, I'm worried about what this means for my practice. They hear about the medical home. They hear about changes in evidence-based medicine or standards coming out of this healthcare reform. Do you think the average physician has a lot to worry about as this health reform rolls out?
I don't think they have a lot to worry about in the negative sense, but I think they need to try to take the opportunity to get themselves more informed about what's going on. We sense a lot of anxiety in the broader health professions community, especially among physicians, about what's happening, but also not really understanding the details. So I think the anxiety is, a lot of it's because of not really knowing. The two big issues that I think ought to be positives is that there will be more patients for those practices that have been seeing patients that have not been insured that will have health insurance. And that's obviously the huge policy breakthrough for mm-hmm. the Affordable Care
Act. In a way, the point of the whole thing.
Absolutely. And there's been a big investment also in electronic health records and mm-hmm. really trying to help individual physicians computerize their offices, computerize their information on patients, which also should make it easier for them to deal with, you know, quality improvement, tracking patients, making sure they come in for appropriate, you know, prevention and treatment. So in a sense, I think those two are very positive. There are also incentives for prevention for the mm-hmm. first time, so physicians that are oriented to making sure their patients have age-appropriate preventive services, which weren't paid for in the past, will be paid for against federal guidelines.
So they might be able to get their diabetes monitored or cholesterol levels checked or maybe a wellness program.
Exactly, and that's a huge breakthrough. And I think it's especially for kids. I know when I was seeing patients it was a while ago, but at any rate, you had to sort of pretend that the child had a cold in mm-hmm. order to give them immunizations. And so that's all changed now, and doctors will be able to bill specifically for these kind of preventive services that they haven't been able to in the past.
So let me just go there for one second. I think some physicians in primary care or family care medicine, they're afraid they're going to be overwhelmed by a sea of newly insured patients coming for their wellness checkups. Mm-hmm. Is that a legitimate fear?
Well, I think this is a big issue. We know that nationally there are inadequate numbers of primary care practices, physicians, nurse practitioners, others in that area. And it's been because we haven't really invested in incentives for mm-hmm. physicians to be practicing in primary care. So there's a 10% bump up in fees that's scheduled as part of accountable care. And I think that's not a lot when you compare the fees that specialists charge relative to primary
right.
care physicians, but at least it's an awareness and identification by policymakers that more has to be done.
Do you think that the only way to handle these newly insured folks who are looking for more prevention, all to the good, is to try and empower other healthcare professionals like nurses or pharmacists to do more?
I absolutely do, and I think they're ready for that. The U.S. Institute of Medicine has really been putting out reports focusing on especially the nursing profession and that people should be able to practice at the top of their license, and I think that's the the challenge. There are states, there are debates among the professions about what that means,
right.
and especially the degree of independent practice.
Some battles even, sometimes.
Totally, and I think we really have to be realistic about the shortage in the primary care areas and figure out how to assure that nurses, PAs, and pharmacists are very interested in helping to get involved in terms of especially preventive interventions. Pharmacies are now going to be sites for a lot of primary care intervention, especially with the large chain mm-hmm. pharmacy. So mm-hmm. it's just
those
a new reality.
Clinics that they're
That's
opening
right.
up.
That's
yeah.
right. And yeah. it's a new reality. And I think we have to look at all the options for expanding primary care availability.
So what is it that keeps you awake at night regarding the Affordable Care Act? What's one of its main weaknesses?
I think the real issue is the sort of traditionally underserved patients, individuals in poor communities that haven't had access to other than emergency rooms, really understanding, you know, how to engage, how to get into the exchanges, the marketplaces, how to get insurance, how to sign up for Medicaid if they're eligible. We've had...
So in a way, the docs might need to be ready to help them, too, with that information.
Hopefully. And I think a lot of organized practices in hospitals and community health centers are really focusing on eligibility determination. And it's going to be a challenge for... certainly for small physician practices. There are a lot of very large physician practices who are going to put a lot of energy into assuring that their patients are made eligible for health insurance.
So you've spent a lot of time in urban health settings now. What do we do to get access to the urban underserved and underinsured? You know, just having insurance isn't going to get them to a doctor.
Yeah, I think that's right. And a lot of hospitals in this Accountable Care Act changes in the system are really looking to connect to individual physician practices, to community health centers. So there's more of a network. So if a patient does have a small practice in their community, they know they will have backup with specialists, with linkages to a hospital, and that should give them more comfort. I think the other big issue is hours of availability. Many practices have really not moved to providing evening hours or weekend hours, and you see that beginning to happen, but a lot of people, especially in underserved communities who work one job, two jobs, in many instances, emergency rooms are the only place that are available when they have the time to seek care.
You think we're going to see any of the return to the old home visit?
Well, I think there's some institutions that are considering that. I think the first order of business is really being sure we have enough traditional physician practices, community health centers, and primary care availability that's a little bit more one-stop shopping than a physician practice home visit. But I think many medical schools are reintroducing those to their curricula.
So let me ask you a little bit of an advocacy question. Is this going to require a shift in advocacy, the idea of what a good advocate is, away from the I get all my patients every resource, even marginal ones, to something else? How do you see that physician under health reform working with the patient in terms of their ethical duties to that patient?
Well, I think the first thing is that the primary care access issue is a big issue because physicians don't have a lot of time with their patients, mm-hmm. and that's a legitimate concern that they have. But I think building into the practices education, information for patients to use the system wisely is really important. I also think that, you know, many physicians, they've got to sort of rechannel, if you will, that advocacy and definition of resources to really focus a lot on quality. I think we're hoping that in the future, especially if we move more towards a managed care environment, that physicians will know that their income also links to meeting certain quality standards. And that allows them to be strong advocates, but by the same token, being sure that that the right things are being done for the right patients, and they should get rewarded for that.
All right. Let's move toward the end of our interview with a question that's specific to the New York experience. And since I've been here, there have been all kinds of efforts by the outgoing Mayor Bloomberg, to try and shape people's behavior. You know, he's gotten criticized for being kind of the mayor who's a nanny. He's telling us we can't drink big gulp sodas and many, many other public health initiatives, post calories up in restaurants and so forth. He'd put more vegetables into the school lunches. Is it appropriate for government to take this role in trying to tell us what's good for us? I mean, it's one thing for the doctor to say, we're going to do wellness monitoring. It's a very different thing when it starts to be your government saying, this is good for you, this is bad for you.
Yeah. Well, I think there is. I think in two ways. One, obviously, is giving people information so they know what healthy choices are. But the most important role of government is making the resources available in communities to help people who don't have healthy choices, such as the issue of school foods, of green markets in communities, mm-hmm. of public space to exercise, of safe space to exercise. I mean, these are all things that many individuals can't take advantage of. So they know what they should do, but they can't do it.
And do you think the doctor has a role politically in engaging those issues?
I think absolutely. I mean, many of the large physician practices, interestingly, and I think hospitals are beginning to get the notion that if they keep taking care of patients only when they cross the threshold to the institution and don't try to deal with some of these root causes of issues like obesity that lead to chronic diseases. I mean, tobacco, exercise, diet. Those are the shared risk factors of cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, mm-hmm. and pulmonary disease. So we got to tackle those. You can get a lot for your money by helping communities create healthier environments, and physicians have a clear role. They have a lot of influence with their patients. They have a lot of influence with community leaders, and hopefully they can start to use them in both arenas.
So thanks very much for joining us and sharing your experience and your insights into a rapidly changing healthcare environment.
Well, it's an exciting time, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
So if you'd like to comment on the interview and the program, please use that comment button that you'll see on the page, and we really appreciate your feedback and insight, and thank you very much for watching.